Strange Stories UK here again for Series 4, Episode 4. This is Canning Town, Crime and Corruption, Part 4. Mainly about the Bowers organised crime group. So this podcast will again be a bit of a ramble, touching on various subjects and focusing in on some areas. It's about organised crime in East London and the Essex areas, mainly about events from the late 1990s and early 2000s. This is the fourth podcast on the subject, and although I'd like to concentrate on something else, there seems so much in this topic. So many stories about organised crime in East London and the Essex and Kent areas. So many stories. I will change topic in October, but have another couple of podcasts on this run. I also want to post a podcast on the Retterton, the Essex Boys murders, but we'll do this later now. It's such a well-covered topic, I'm sure no one will be waiting for my thoughts on it. But I do want to make a contribution to the subject. There are a couple of very good Facebook sites on this, with some very interesting postings. This is the Essex Boys Murders Discussion Group and the Essex Boys Then and Now. I will be making a podcast available deconstructing the book Judas Pig, written by Jimmy Holmes. Jimmy Holmes felt cheated by those he was associated with and told his story as he remembered it in fictional form. Although many of the stories are based on his experiences as a criminal working for the Hunt OCG up until the mid-1990s. I will make this podcast dependent on a donation on Ko-Fi, which I will include in the podcast description. This is a small donation, £3, towards the podcast, which helps towards the cost of hosting the podcast, and it keeps the podcast going. I was intended to make 100 podcasts, and I've achieved this now and will continue to do so if I can make the podcast self-supporting regarding its fixed costs. To be truthful, it doesn't cost a great deal to make a podcast available online of my time. Anyway, I won't bore on the details. I'll get on with the podcast. So one of the organised crime groups, OCGs, that made up the Canning Town Cartel was the Bowers OCG. They were, or are, an influential OCG that managed to stay under the radar for the large part. The Metropolitan Police started to seriously investigate this group from 1998 for drug importations and money laundering. Operation Deanside was launched to target the Bowers OCG, by which time they had some dangerous criminals working with it. This podcast relates to the Bowers OCG as it existed up to about 10 years ago, and much of it is based on the secret Metropolitan Police report Operation Tiberius, which was published in 2002. The report was put online by a couple of blogs who wanted to expose the extent of organised crime and police corruption in the East London and Essex areas. The Operation Tiberius report is available online, probably much to the disappointment of Metropolitan Police. The Tiberius report has been criticised as being based on rumour and gossip, and even the police admit that some of it is speculation. However, it is an interesting read and gives good detail right down to the car registration numbers that were driven by the suspected criminals at that time. The Bowers family started to come to prominence in the early 1970s when they partly filled the vacuum left by the Tibbs family, many of whom had been recently jailed. The Tibbs family had been involved in, guess what, the scrap metal business. Jimmy Tibbs was jailed for 5 years along with his brother and his father for an attempted murder as the result of a gangland feud, resulting in the death of another brother. Jimmy Tibbs later became a very successful boxing trainer, a born-again Christian and a well-respected member of the community. He would train world champion boxers at the boxing gym owned by the Bowers OCG. The Bower brothers started their own boxing gym with the help of local labour councillors who thought boxing was a good outlet for frustrated youth, giving them an outlet for their energies. The gym was moved to Caxton Street in 1993, the gym being called the Peacock Gym. There are videos of the Bower brothers about the gym on YouTube. The brothers come across well. Martin and Tony Bowers are the two kingpins of the family. Anthony Bowers, Tony Bowers, who lived at the Green Walk, Chingford, was the head of the Bowers OCG. He was born during March 1958. Tony Bowers had convictions including robbery, burglary, handling theft, deception, and actual bodily harm. And during the 1990s, he was a regular visitor abroad to countries well known for exporting drugs. On the YouTube video, the brothers explain how they started the gym in 1976, about the time that boxing was stopped as a sport in school. The Bowers sell the gym as a community-based operation, saying that it's a bit of the old Canning Town in an area that's changed out of all recognition. However, it seems probable that the Peacock Gym was a respectable front to business carried out by the Bowers OCG. The Peacock Gym is committed to the promotion of sporting events, primarily boxing and football. The Peacock Promotions London. They cultivate a respectable image by running youth projects and charity events and maintaining a positive presence in the local media. The Peacock Gym advertised itself as a community base and encouraged local police to use its facilities. The SIS, basically the UK secret police that keeps changing its name, tried to use this aspect to spy on the Bowers OCG. The police approached the gym to ask to use it as a temporary police base to launch operations on the excuse of car crime in the area, which admittedly was a problem. It was hoped that this would give them a chance to gain access to parts of the gym where they could make arrangements to install listening devices. Fred Cutts, the former Metropolitan Police Inspector, advised the Bowers that under no circumstances should police officers be given access to the gym outside of opening hours. A previous podcast in this series suggests that there was organised crime targeting high-value cars in the area, although it was not thought to be an area of crime that interested the Bowers OCG, more of a crime involving aspects of the previous corrupt Newham Council. The Bowers were said to have built up their OCG using a combination of violence and corruption and charm and charitable acts. It was said that the Bowers had developed a high profile in Newham through their association with celebrities who enjoyed the frisson of being around hard men. The Bowers were also socialising and no doubt networking with police officers and local politicians. One of the main members of the Bowers OCG was Roy Charles Hilder, whose nickname was Porky. He would be in his 70s now. He was second only to Tony Bowers. Hilder, who has since retired, lives outside London in Chislehurst in Kent. Hilder has a long association with other OCGs in London and is a well-known criminal figure. He had contact with the Adams family, the Arif, the Brindle families, and he often acted as a middleman and a go-between in negotiations between organised crime groups in London. Other key members of the Bowers OCG would include Martin Bowers, Paul Bowers, George Lamprell, and Lewis Nichols. Former Metropolitan Police officer Fred Cutts was a conduit for the OCG with other serving police officers. Fred Cutts was an important figure in the Bowers OCG. He was, in effect, the bent copper. High-value lorry hijacking was a Bauer speciality. Joseph Ashman and Jonathan Turner were two key members of the Bauer's OCG, often assisted by Tony Gash as a lorry driver, among others. To try to disrupt criminal activities during March 2000, the police put Turner under surveillance, and he was soon apprehended drug dealing and arrested with 7 kilos of cannabis resin. During October 2000, he was imprisoned for 9 months, Fred Cutts appearing at court as a character witness. After just 2 months, Turner was electronically tagged and released. Joseph Ashman, also known as Tony Wood, was another member of the ICF, the West Ham United supporter and group, and a former sniper. That's the gang of lorry hijackers in Canning Town. He was of stocky build with tattoos on his arms and another scrap metal dealer. He also owned a haulage company called Raynham Haulage. He had a long police record, including various convictions for violence. Ashman's role within the OCG was hijacking HGV loads and the distribution of bootleg and counterfeit cigarettes. During early 2001, Tony Bowers had flown to China, where he was organising the manufacture of counterfeit Benton & Hedges cigarettes, which would be smuggled into the UK. Within the year, the police had evidence of Ashman being in possession of a lorry load of fake cigarettes, and a hijacked load of cigarettes and spirits, and a lorry load of Dell computers. However, it seemed that there was never enough evidence to arrest Ashman. The OCGs were clever. They knew how the police operated and had contacts within the police, telling them and advising them what to do to avoid arrest. These police, of course, would be rewarded for their help. Ashman was finally caught with Tony Gash and a couple of others unloading a stolen lorry load of 6 million cigarettes at his yard for Raynham Haulage on the 8th of August 2001. Turner was thought to be with them, but he escaped by climbing over a fence and running off. The Bowers OCG had Joe Ashman and John Turner coordinating their lorry hijacking throughout southern England. They'd learnt the skills as snipers from a young age, and they were experienced lorry hijackers. It was interesting to the police that the overwhelming theft of stolen loads had their trailers turn up empty near Ashman's yard at Raynham in Essex. Ashman having many contacts in the haulage business, and he would know what loads were being carried by different hauliers. His haulage business being very useful to the Bowers hijacking, drug distribution and bootleg networks. Ashman also had a close working relationship with John Turner, whose job was handling the distribution of cocaine and cannabis to other criminal groups in Suffolk and East Yorkshire. The drugs were transported through lorry deliveries. It was estimated that the Bowers OCG had made millions of pounds from these stolen loads. During the same period, police noted that Ashman had moved from his council house in Canning Town to a large detached house at Raynham, near his business yard at Raynham Haulage, with his wife and his two sons. The principal criminal contacts that Ashman used and the police were investigating back in 2001 included David Bland from Hull, James Freeman, who had addresses in Plaistow and Hull, Paul Freeman, who wasn't related to James Freeland, from Ipswich, and Leon Phillips from Felixstowe. All of these were being investigated by the Major Crime Unit of Suffolk Police in relation to organised high-value container thefts from the freight terminal at Felixstowe Docks. But the police operation were hampered by security leaks and information being fed back to the hijackers. All of these people being mentioned in the Tiberius report with other incriminating comments and potted histories. Police were given intelligence during June 2001 that the Bowers OCG were arranging an importation of a ton of cannabis from Thailand that were to be concealed in a container load of oriental vases. However, not a lot seemed to have come from these tips to the police. There never seemed to be any arrests. The Bowers OCG obtained a company called Furniture Direct, which was located in the industrial estate next to Millwall Football Club. Furniture Direct was managed by James Martin O.D., who previously served a 9-year prison sentence in France for drug trafficking. Since his release, O.D. has been living in Holland, running transport and that was smuggling drugs from Asia to the UK through the Channel ports. Now he was running Furniture Direct, and had a history of importing ceramic pots from the Far East. The TSU, the Territorial Support Group for the Metropolitan Police, responsible for civil order, these are the tough guys of the Met, were tasked to provide 2 covert CCTV systems to cover the warehouses of Furniture Direct in Rotherhithe, pending the anticipated arrival of Tony Bower's shipment of cannabis from Thailand. This facility was in place by the end of July 2001 and indicated that James O.D. was running the Furniture Direct business warehouse with the help of his son Lawrence and possibly a Harold Raphael from Bermondsey. There appeared to be very little in the way of legitimate business conducted from the premises, according to the police reports. During July 2001, conventional surveillance and intelligence sources revealed that Jonathan Turner was coordinating the supply of amphetamine chemical BMK to a group of criminals who were intending to set up their own facilities for amphetamine production in the Nottinghamshire and Lincolnshire areas. There was an attempt to arrest Turner with several litres of the chemical, but he was lost by the surveillance team during the handover. Police thought that Turner was probably working independently of the Bowers OCG, and this was his own initiative. But all of this was a grey area, and often typical of police reports on organised crime, with different imports often confusing the focus of operations. The Bowers OCG had contacts with organised criminal groups elsewhere in Europe and the Far East, and use these to facilitate the large-scale importation of cocaine, amphetamine and cannabis. They were also well connected with other criminal groups around the UK and handling their own drug distribution to a number of other regions, in particular Scotland and the north and northeast of England. The Bowers were probably the dominant OCG in the Canning Town cartel. The Hunt OCG also contenders for Dop Dog, but they often work in conjunction with each other. In most respects, they were part of the same team, the Canning Town Cartel. The Bowers did not want to attract publicity unless it was positive PR. Operation Deanside wanted to investigate various criminals' crimes, including money laundering, lorry hijacking, drug trafficking, tobacco and alcohol smuggling. Detectives wanted to bug the boardroom above the Peacock Gym. Also, they wanted to bug the public house owned by the Bowers and what was known as the shed that was used for gambling sessions next to the pub, the Peacock Pub. The public house was called the Peacock and was owned by, or part owned by, another member of the Bowers OCG, Stephen Clark. Stephen Clark, whose father was the well-known criminal Stephen Bolteyes Clark, who had a role in disposing of the millions of pounds stolen in the Brinks Mat raid. This money, of course, most of it was never recovered. It was suggested that some of the proceeds of Brinks Mat was invested by Stephen Clark in the Bowers OCG. The rumour was that Stephen Bolt Eyes Clark had bricked up some of the bricks matte gold in the chimney of his house in Chislehurst. The younger Stephen Clark was a co-director of Abbey Castle Properties that was thought to use offshore banking as part of a money laundering enterprise. Clark was believed to be an important person in arranging drug importation and distribution on behalf of the Bowers organisation. As mentioned in a previous podcast, the Bowers were keen to be involved in the Docklands regeneration project and were considering constructing a hotel and a casino project to take advantage of the relaxation of gambling laws under the Labour Tony Blair government of the time. The Bowers had dreams and plans to build a business empire and go legitimate. During 2001-2002, the Bowers OCG, through Tony Bowers, had been considering a £6 million investment in the construction of a hotel and casino complex in the Docklands development area. It was thought that Fred Cutts was going to be the manager of the casino if the development went ahead, as seemed likely, with the enthusiasm being shown for the development of that part of London at the time. However, it wasn't to be. The Bowers OCG suffered a major setback when a police bugging operation recorded plans to rob HSBC's bank depot at Gatwick Airport during March 2003. Bowers was to receive a 12-year sentence, and 10 people were convicted in total, including Tony Bowers' right-hand man, John Square Turner. John Square Turner was a career criminal from Canning Town who got to know the Bowers brothers following West Ham United Football Club. A day supporting the team would ideally be a day out with the lads, a punch-up with a rival group of supporters. Turner liked to arrange confrontations with other groups of supporters, and he later became a key person in Bowers' lorry hijacking and drug importations, and, well, as already mentioned, was very close to Tony Bowers. Turner was thought to have been a sniper in his younger days, where he learnt about the lorry hijacking business. I suppose in criminal terms, if somebody can be trusted to back you in a fight with rivals and doesn't run away, then he can be trusted. It seemed that this was the code for a lot of people in Canning Town in the 1970s and 80s, when the criminal kingpins were becoming established. The Bowers criminal empire was controlled from the offices at the Peacock Gymnasium, Caxton Street North, Canning Town, E16, and to a lesser degree from the Peacock Public House at 92 Victoria Dock Road, Canning Town, E16. The two premises were situated in a mainly industrial area where the local residents were traditionally hostile towards police and where it was notoriously difficult to mount covert operations. A covert video camera was set up to cover the front of the Peacock Gym at the beginning of an operation, but it was located and put out of action almost immediately by persons unknown. The Bowers OCG was suspected of importing drugs in HGV loads of flowers originating in Holland. The trucks would arrive at Dover by ferry from Rotterdam and would be driven from Dover to the New Covent Garden, diverting en route from the M2 to Sheerness for the drugs to be unloaded. Sources indicate that the shipment would then be collected from Sheerness and taken to a safe house, probably in the town of Loughton near Epping Forest. Then it would be broken up and supplied down the chain around the UK. Police intelligence also suggested that representatives of the Bowers organisation met their buyers near a pond in Loughton, where they would take advance payment and leave the customer to wait while the order was put together. The pond near the Premier Inn at Loughton was thought to be a meeting place. Customers were told to return later and deliver a car in which the drugs would be concealed. The presence of Billy Freeman, the right-hand man to Paul Bowers, at the Peacock Gym was cited as a good indication that a drug transaction was in progress, since he rarely went there at any other time. It was also said that the business was conducted at Loughton, as the Bowers did not want any criminal activity anywhere near the Peacock Gym. The gym was to be kept uncontroversial and untainted by any criminal activity. Ironically, it seems that the Peacock Gym was probably one of the safest places to be in East London. Lewis Nicol, another Bowers OCG member, was thought to be involved in the drug importations. His daughter Elizabeth Nicol and her partner Derek White, who specialised in money laundering, ran a flower business at Covent Garden Market. Here drugs were concealed in flower pots were delivered from Holland. So another method of importation, drug imports through ceramics. The Canning Town Cartel, as previously described, was a collection of crime families and associates in the Newham area of London who ran organised crime groups. For example, in the previous podcast we considered the actions of the Hunt OCG, who were considered the dominant group for a period before they decided to go legit. However, these groups worked closely together and maintained links with other crime groups in the London area and beyond. These OCGs would often call in trusted freelance operators to carry out business on their behalf, such as smuggling in drugs. The OCGs would put up the money to buy drugs and pay a commission to a freelance group, often a smaller OCG, to smuggle in the drugs. If there was a problem, such as an informant or somebody trying to rip off the drugs, this person would be dealt with in a way considered appropriate, both as a revenge as a warning to others. It was important to the OCGs not to show any weakness and always to act as if there was aggressive action taken against them, to act in an equally aggressive way. Some OCGs seem to take this aspect too far. It was suggested that the Hunt OCG would push and push and intimidate smaller OCGs. To keep their hands clean, OCGs would often call in others to carry out difficult work. One person that could be called on to sort out difficult business for an OCG was Canning Town criminal Christopher Pearman. Pearman was thought to have been protected by corrupt police through the OCGs that he worked for, as the OCGs wanted to protect those that worked for them. Christopher Pearman was said to be an enforcer and a hitman. He had two sons who both worked freelance for the Canning Town Cartel. The Pearmans were a violent family. Christopher Pearman's sons had been involved in a fight at the Epping Forest Country Club on October the 3rd, 1999. One of his sons, Darren, who was aged 27 at the time, had been killed, stabbed by doorman at the club. Darren Pearman and a group of men had attacked the doorman, or bouncers, using weapons that had been smuggled into the club. One of the doormen was called Ronnie Fuller. There was supposed history between Ronnie Fuller and Darren Pearman after Fuller had ejected a girl from another club which he had been working at, and Pearman had not been happy about this. This had caused a fight in which Mr. Fuller came off best when Pearman was ejected from Charlie Chan's nightclub beneath the former Walthamstow Dogs Track a few weeks earlier. Charlie Chan's was a very popular venue, and most of the local youth had used the club at some time or another. Darren Pearman had attended with friends, including Dave King. Dave King was said to have been the cause of the fight between Pearman and Fuller, Dave King being described as an arrogant bully. The encounter at Charlie Chan's started when another man was cut by a bottle or a glass. The glassing kicked off a big fight and the doorman got involved. As said, one of these was ex-wrestler Ronnie Fuller. Ronnie didn't know the unwritten rules in Essex. If you're a doorman and you grab people like Pearman or Dave Rolex King, you're going to make trouble for yourself because they have to keep their reputations. Darren Pearman and Dave King were forcibly ejected from the venue by Fuller, who was on the door. so Pearman and King had suffered a loss of face. On October the 3rd, 1999, Darren Pearman and others, some of whom were members of the Canning Town Cartel, had hidden weapons, including machetes, inside sofas inside the country club. These were probably smuggled in by women. These weapons were later produced to attack the door staff. However, during the fighting, Pearman was stabbed with one of his own gang's weapons and fatally wounded, and his brother was also wounded. Fuller and another bouncer from the club were initially charged with violent disorder after Pearman Jr. died. But the crime of the Crown Prosecution Service later dropped the charges, saying that they'd acted in self-defence after investigations showed that Pearman, or the Pearman group, had caused all the trouble. Fuller, who had been threatened by friends of Pearman, moved house to Grays in Essex in a bid to escape any reprisals. Fuller was well able to handle himself and would not easily have been persuaded to move. He had friends who were supportive of him, and he would not have been easily persuaded, considering the support that he had. However, Pearman's friends and others involved in the fight at Epping Country Club had been involved with the various Canning Town gangs, or OCGs. They had refused to cooperate with the police, saying that they had sought it out themselves. In respect, it seems clear what they meant, but this may have been part of the reason why the Crown Prosecution Service did not think there was sufficient evidence to progress the case. Fuller had moved about 20 miles from Loughton, which was near Epping Forest Country Club, to Grays near Tilbury in a bid to escape any reprisals. This wasn't nearly far enough. I had to stay in a hotel near Grays for an extended period when I was working for customs, usually coming home at weekends. While in the area, as young males, my companions, we checked out the local pubs, but often spent a lot of free time on the hotel putting green, playing for small stakes, as there didn't seem to be a great amount to do. We went to Rackall's nightclub one night at Basildon, Rackall's of Essex Boys fame. A slightly surreal experience as a llama ran in front of the car on the way back to the hotel in the early hours. I didn't find Grays as a town too bad, had its own shopping area, but it felt deprived socially. There wasn't much to make the town stand out. I had my hair cut at the local barber's, and the hairdresser said that he'd been in a band in the 1970s called the Rubettes. They had a number one hit record, Sugar Baby Love. In October 2019, the town of Grays was again in the news. In an industrial park in the town, the bodies of 39 people who had been smuggled into the country were found in the back of a truck. Darren Pearman had been a member of the Canning Town firm that operated in that area of Newham. It was all part of the same group of people as the Intercity firm, which centred on the West Ham football supporters, group of hooligans that moved into the criminal enterprises and were part of the Canning Town cartel. They were all very violent and had to be up front to protect their reputations. Darren was described as looking like a geek with a foppish haircut, but was described by those that knew him as a raging lunatic. 10 months after Darren Pearman's death, on Tuesday, August the 20th, 2000, Ronnie Fuller, then aged 30, was murdered. It was just as he was setting off to work from his house at Parkside Grays, just after 7:30 a.m. When Fuller was shot, a man dressed in a black motorcycle-style coat, who was thought to be Christopher Pearman, rode into Parkside and was said to shoot Fuller several times before riding off towards the old AE13 via King Edward Drive. The scooter was described as black, supporting L plates at the front and the rear. Other police sources indicated that a corrupt Essex police officer had shown the CCTV from the country club to Christopher Pearman, showing his son being killed, and this is what led to Fuller being murdered. It is not known what the reason for this was. It could have been Christopher Pearman requesting to see the video. Another suggestion was that David Hunt, from the Hunt OCG, gave Pearman the tape of his boy's murder and pointed him towards Fuller, so that Fuller would be in his debt. Jimmy Holmes mentioned in his book Judas Pig how the Hunt OCG collected psychopaths for when things needed doing. I'd like to add here that it seems that the OCGs, such as the Hunt OCG, seem to get blamed for quite a lot that may have nothing to do with them. Maybe it's convenient to blame a lot of crimes on OCGs when they have a reputation for violence. Essex Police said that they did not believe the deaths, that's Pearman and Fuller deaths, to be linked, which is very strange, as it was on record that Fuller had moved away to Grays after being threatened, possibly at the suggestion of the police. The Operation Tiberius report states as a fact that Christopher Pearman killed Mr. Fuller as a direct result of his son's death. Further grounds to arrest Pearman came in January 2007, when he was in fact convicted for his part in the murder of Rocky Dawson, who was aged 24, on May 2nd, 2006. Rocky was shot several times in the back as he put his children, a girl then aged 6, and a boy aged 2, into his Fiat Punto car at Hornchurch, East London. So much for gangster protocol for not involving families or children. After being shot, Rocky managed to crawl back to his parents' house, where he died in his mother's arms. Christopher Pearman, who was aged 63 at the time, and James Tompkins, aged 66, were later jailed for life, but the Met believed that others were also involved in the hit. Rocky's mother was called Candy, and she wrote to her son's killers. And in 2012, Pearman agreed to see her in Her Majesty's Prison, Franklin, County Durham. Pearman claimed that he and Tompkins had been paid £5,000 each to kill her other son, Ross, aged 30, by a businessman who suspected that he was one of two masked armed robbers who raided his home. Candy said that the attack was meant for my other boy, but when Rocky came out of the house, Tompkins said to Pearman, "His brother will do," and that was the one that got shot. Pearman told Candy who paid them and said why, but the name was kept secret. Candy said that she was going to tell the police. Pearman told her that he would do what he could to help her, but he didn't think the evidence would be strong enough to gain a conviction. Pearman said that he got the impression that the police position was that they'd got the man who pulled the trigger on Rocky, that's Tompkins, and they got the mug who'd driven the car, who was Pearman. And so that was it, case closed. The Operation Tiberius report states that at the time of writing in 2002, Pearman's life was thought to be under threat because police believe that he shot Fuller, and as a result, there were three individuals thought to be friends of Fuller that made it clear that they intended to kill him in retaliation. These were door staff whom he worked with, and they may have been part of another OCG called the CAMP, Organised Crime Group, who were made up of those who worked as door staff or bouncers. The door staff were known for working with drug dealers in clubs, and it was thought that other issues were involved which nobody wanted or were willing to talk about. I think it's doubtful that there was going to be any attempt on Pearman's life. The rumour was spread just to give misinformation and give Pearman an excuse to be carrying a gun. The Tiberius report included a chapter on the gang linked to Rocky's murder and the police corruption, stating that the syndicate has achieved its invulnerability through a mixture of utilising corrupt police contacts and the intimidation of witnesses brave enough to give evidence against them. The suggestion was that the police thought that the Canning Town cartel, or part of it, had organised the hit. The Rocky Dawson murder was thought to be a contract killing, and as mentioned, a case of mistaken identity. Pearman Sr. and James Tompkins carried out the murder in almost an identical manner as the slaying of Mr. Fuller, except A four-wheel drive vehicle was used instead of a motorbike. Pearman drove the Land Rover Freelander while Tompkins fired shots from a window before they dumped it and burnt it out nearby. Christopher Pearman, then of Deer Park Way, Waltham Abbey, Essex, had burglary and drug importation convictions. He pleaded guilty to murder and was jailed for life with a minimum of 23 years. Tompkins fled to Spain but was extradited and jailed for life for murder in April 2011, and he was ordered to serve a minimum of 33 years. Essex Police confirmed that it regularly reviewed the Fuller case, but during the past three reviews it was known that Pearman was convicted of similar offences, Rocky Dawson, and had previous firearms involvement. He also had a motive to kill Mr. Fuller, and there was also the Metropolitan Police Intelligence report suggesting that he was the killer. But he was never questioned at any point on the Fuller killing. According to the Tiberius report, Christopher Pearman was found in possession of a firearm 8 months after the Fuller's murder in April 2001. He appeared under the threat of assassination in what may have been an unrelated feud to Mr. Fuller. After an associate was murdered, and he and another associate faced similar attempts on their lives. So, what's the story there? The report said that on April the 6th, 2001, Pearman was arrested near the Hippodrome nightclub in Leicester Square after threatening a cab driver with a gun. He was found to be wearing covert body armour and carrying a five-shot snub-nosed revolver and a lock knife while accompanied by another man. There's no record of him being charged, and the Metropolitan Police said the case was too old to say what happened following the arrests. The Tiberius report said that the previous attempt was made on Pearman's life when shots were fired into his car after one of the tyres had been deflated. The attack was identical to the method used on one of his associates, an enforcer from the Isle of Dogs called David Armstrong. He was shot and wounded in his car parked outside Spinnaker House, Byng Street, East 14 on the Isle of Dogs, on the evening of March the 20th, 2001. Armstrong was described by the police as a large, imposing ex-boxer with a cocaine habit and ready access to firearms. He had scars on his forehead and left cheek, extensive tattoos, and greying black hair. He was left-handed and had gunshot wound scars on the right side of his neck and face. He was considered to be unstable and a dangerous psychopath. He hated the police and been the subject of two previous armed arrest operations before 2001. Evidently, Armstrong had been aware of the threat to his safety and had borrowed a friend's car in an effort to avoid being identified. One of the tyres of the car had been deflated while it was unattended, and as Armstrong got into the car, a number of shots were fired at him through a driver's window. He was hit in the face and neck by two .32 caliber bullets, which lodged in the roof of his mouth and against his spine. Armstrong was taken to the Royal London Hospital and kept under armed guard while he underwent emergency surgery. He was visited there the next morning by Tony Bowers, and over the next few days Armstrong received an excess of 60 visitors, the majority being well-known East London criminals. In trying to discover the reasons for the shooting, it appears that Tommy Moffat was part of a Glasgow organised crime group who were buying cocaine from the Bowers organised crime group and passing it on to other groups in Scotland. Cocaine at that time was selling at £27,000 a kilo. Stephen Clark was thought to be the Bowers crime group member who liaised with Tommy Moffat and gave instructions to Pearman, Armstrong and Donovan. In late 2000, David Armstrong had seriously assaulted two men from the north of England who had lost 20 kilos of cocaine and 22 kilos of cannabis belonging to the Bowers organisation. The attack by Armstrong left one of the victims partially blinded. Armstrong, who was the main enforcer of the Bowers OCG, was said to have been given the instructions to carry out the attack by Tony Bowers and Roy Hilder. Then it seemed that another OCG from the north had carried out a revenge attack. For the next 2 months, the Bowers organisation was said to have maintained an unusually low profile. Tony Bowers arranged for David Armstrong to stay with Tommy Moffat in Glasgow until he recovered from his wounds. Tiberius said that Christopher Pearman and David Armstrong, who were considered psychopaths and a firearms danger by the police, and a criminal called John Donovan from Bing Street, Isle of Dogs, were running cocaine for an East London crime family into Scotland. Just over 6 weeks before the attack on Armstrong, John Donovan, who was a very good friend of Armstrong, was found dead on a deserted stretch of dual carriageway outside Aberdeen, with a fatal gunshot wound to his head. His car had been left on the opposite side of the road, and a shotgun was lying near his body. Tiberius said that John Donovan was known to have been working with Armstrong in delivering consignments of cocaine from London to Scotland, probably on behalf of a London organised crime group. And although not stated in the Tiberius reports, there were strong hints that it was the Bowers group that Pearman, Armstrong and Donovan were working for. Officers from Grampian Police travelled to London and made inquiries, including interviews with Armstrong and the suspected crime group that he was working for. The Grampian CIRD eventually wrote off the Donovan death as a suicide. This, of course, would avoid any difficult questions. A former Metropolitan Police Detective Sergeant Matthews, who was heavily involved in investigating organised crime, said he arrested Pearman Sr. with others in the late 1980s for street-level drug dealing. Matthews said that police corruption at the time would have protected criminals like Pearman from prosecution. The former detective sergeant said that at the time of Operation Tiberius, there was an incredible lack of sharing of intelligence, and any villain worth his salt was a registered informant. That way they were able to protect their interests by either having a corrupt or naive detective on board with information feed going in both directions, often with false information. The former detective sergeant continued that the Fuller murder should at least be reviewed and Pearman should be questioned at the very least. He said that there was not a free flow of information between the police departments, let alone forces. Intelligence is power and is jealously guarded. The Essex police were asked by several people at different times over the Fuller murder and the possible connection with Pearman being responsible for the murder. The force was also asked to say if Essex police had ever carried out any corruption inquiries concerning the Fuller murder. An Essex police spokesperson quoted some police talk, which I won't bore you with here, along the lines of, we can't comment on individual cases, blah, blah, blah. Intelligence can't be publicly disclosed. An extensive investigation was carried out and a number of lines of inquiry were considered, blah, blah, blah. We cannot comment on alleged involvement of particular individuals. I think you can fill in the dots. Anyhow, another full investigation was carried out during March 2016 into the Fuller murder, but the case was effectively closed in 2000. A Freedom of Information Act request about the case revealed that the force still had about 15 boxes of evidence made up of statements and medical notes and photographs. It has since said that Mr. Fuller's actions were lawful, so it's difficult to comprehend why there's been no further inquiries into his murder. It was suggested that Christopher Pearman was being protected by corrupt police. The story put out that Pearman's life was under threat was probably a smokescreen to muddy the water and give him an excuse for carrying a weapon, although there may have been other cogent reasons why people would have wanted Pearman dead, reasons that we don't know about. There were also allegations that a detective constable Hendy of the Grampian Police was also involved in some way in the drug dealing. Hendy was either corrupt where he was playing Pearman, Armstrong and Donovan in some way. There are articles in the Scottish press at the time of Donovan's death that suggested that a number of corrupt police in Scotland Yard had been in some way involved, and the names Detective Superintendent David Imrie Cook and Detective Constable Derek Haslam were mentioned. David Imrie Cook, or David Cook, who incidentally is married to Jackie Haynes of the Crime Watch television programme fame, was said by Private Eye to be the most corrupt policeman in the United Kingdom. There is a link with the Daniel Morgan murder. We can't really go into that here, as we would disappear into another tangent whirlpool that would take us away. There's a very good series on the Daniel Morgan murder available online, which I can recommend. Daniel Morgan was said to have been murdered by corrupt police as he was about to give details of police corruption in London to the newspapers. Going back to the Scottish murder, John Donovan's family said that he would never have committed suicide. He had a very happy marriage to his wife Dina and had never shown any suicidal tendencies. There was no note, there were no fingerprints on the gun, not even Donovan's, so it seems very unlikely that it was suicide. Dave Relics King was Darren Pearman's friend and was with him when he first tangled with Fuller. Pearman was killed at the Epping Forest Country Club on October the 3rd, 1999, when he and the people he was with caused a confrontation. Dave King was to die 4 years later on the same day as Darren Pearman, on October the 3rd, 2003. Dave King was known as Rolex, as he dealt in stolen watches. He was described as a big fish in a small pond where he lived. He'd been born in Glasgow before moving to the Lee Valley area. King had been a doorman, a drug dealer, and a celebrity bodyguard for various people, including Robbie Williams, the singer. King had made friends with Tony Tucker, an Essex boy, another big fish in a small pond. King had gained a reputation as a good fighter, which seemed important to those he mixed with in the mid-90s when he frequented Tucker's North London shop selling muscle-building supplements. King had been recently freed from jail for attacking a rival and stuffing him into the boot of his car. King, Dave King, had bought a nightclub in Stevenage, Hertfordshire, called Renaissance. This was used as a front for drug dealing and handling stolen property, especially watches. Renaissance was known as a place to obtain drugs. In some respects, it was the Rackles Club for Stevenage. It seems that Dave King, who lived with his partner and their two children in Julian's Road, Stevenage, was not a popular figure and had the reputation of causing bad feeling amongst people. It was said that he had the knack of winding people up and against each other, and he was a violent bully. He was said to have converted to the Muslim religion when he was in prison. Bodybuilding formed a great part of his lifestyle. As already said, King was a drug dealer and part of an OCG. He was released on bail early following an arrest on suspicion of importing 14 kilograms of heroin from France. He was targeted by criminal associates who thought that he had informed on them. They thought that their OCG, which included Dave Sharma, Roger Vincent and David Smith, had been infiltrated by an informer. And given the ease which Dave King had got out of jail, it suggested that he was the informant. Mickey McAvoy, the original Brinks Mad organiser, was thought to have invested in the OCG business. It was supposed to be McAvoy's gold bricked up in Stephen Clark's chimney. In truth, it does seem that Dave King had turned informant, although this is not known for certain. When the OCG was charged with drugs offences, proceedings against Dave King were dropped at an early stage, prompting one of his co-defendants, Sharma, to shout out in court that he was a grass, an informant. This was thought to be the motive for his murder. Dave Kane knew there was a threat to his life, and he, in turn, took a contract out on Sharma, who he knew had taken out a contract on him. King was shot with an AK-47 as he left a Hertfordshire gym on the 3rd of October 2003. King had left the physical limits gym at Hoddesdon when a white van pulled up and discharged 26 armour-piercing rounds, five of which struck Dave King in the chest. The van was found burnt out later, but the police managed to gain forensic evidence to arrest Roger Vincent and David Smith, who left evidence outside the burnt van. A plastic glove which had a palm print inside. The police later learnt that King was trying to have Mr. Sharma killed, and a contract had been issued. Under the Osman procedure, the officers were obliged to formally tell Sharma that he was the target of a possible contract killing. The police do not tell the potential targets the identities of those suspected of trying to kill them. But it's not known if the police informed King that he had a contract out on him. David Sharma from North London was so frightened of King that he fled to Cannes in the south of France, where he was hiding under a false identity. When other members of the OCG, Vincent from Penn in Buckinghamshire, and Smith, who lived in Boreham Wood, Hertfordshire, heard about the threat to Sharma, they offered to have King shot in retaliation. The two killers were friends with Sharma and offered to kill King purely as a favour with no payment involved. In their minds, David King had informed on them and had to pay the price. They contracted an armed robber, Dean Spencer of Manchester, to carry out the assassination. As it's often thought easier to get an outsider to carry out a hit when perhaps those ordering it would like to do it themselves, as it put distance between them and the killing. Dean Spencer was aged 31. He armed himself with a Webley .38 pistol and five bullets and went with another man to King's Stevenage, a home, on September 22, 2003. But King had been warned about a possible threat to his life, and he was with his minder, Ian Crocker, who was another drug dealer and described by the judge as not a trustworthy person. King had also been taken to wearing a bulletproof vest. The four men were located, locked in a standoff outside Mr. King's home before Spencer lost his nerve and fled. Spencer was later arrested for an armed robbery and told detectives about the murder plot against King. Spencer told the police that when he saw Dave King, how big he was, and wearing a bulletproof vest, he knew that his little gun would be useless against him. When Roger Vincent and David Smith heard Spencer had not carried out the contract, they took matters into their own hands. Aware now that King knew of the murder plot against him and was routinely wearing a bulletproof vest, they got a Hungarian-made Kalashnikov AKS-47 machine gun and loaded it with full metal jackets, armour-piercing bullets. Automatic weapons like that fire 600 bullets a minute, and can kill anyone caught in the crossfire up to 800 metres away. Using a stolen white transit van and a stolen Mercedes as getaway cars, Vincent and Smith stalked King until they saw him leaving the gym, and he wasn't wearing his bulletproof vest. Not that it would have made much difference if it was. In a classic drive-by assassination, Vincent splayed 26 shots at King from close range. Five rounds from 3 second bursts hit him in the arm, chest and leg as he left the physical limits gym. Some of the bullets hit the gym and went through the wall into the gym. It was thought to be the first time the weapon had been used in Britain in automatic mode. Vincent and Smith burnt the van and Mercedes, but as explained, left the forensic evidence. The following day, a couple walking beside Braden Water on the Norfolk Broads spotted a man hurling a red bag into the water and hurrying away. The walkers waded in the water and dragged out the bag. It contained the AKS-47 assault rifle. Police were later able to prove the gun which had previously been belonged to the Hungarian Prisons Authority, was the same one used to kill Dave King. The Kalashnikov was later traced back to a Belgian gunrunner called Mizosi, who also had a British contract involved in supplying firearms to the IRA. On the lip of the curved ammunition clip, they found traces of Smith's DNA. On a towel in the same bag, they found DNA from Vincent. And on another towel, they found fibres from a unique jute rug, which was at the flat used by Vincent. Police also analysed mobile phone transmissions from Hoddesdon to Khan minutes after the shooting. Police believe it was Vincent and Smith calling Sharm to tell him that they'd murdered King. When he was arrested, Vincent, who drove a £100,000 convertible Aston Martin DB7, boasted to detectives that he made £250,000 in cash every year from a string of clubs that he controlled in the east of England. A detective said, "Whenever we talked to anyone in the underworld about Vincent, we discovered that people were terrified of him. He wasn't a big man physically, but he had a fearsome reputation for violence and a hired gun." During their trial, which lasted 7 weeks and followed a Hertfordshire police investigation which tracked more than 100,000 mobile phone calls and took 1,200 witness statements, officers were able to trace the defendant's movements in the days before the shootings and were able to catch them discussing the attack on the phone. Vincent, who was aged 33, was jailed for life to serve a minimum of 30 years. Smith, aged 33, from Elstree in Hertfordshire, was sentenced to 25 years in jail. The Assets Recovery Programme, the Assets Recovery Agency, had frozen £1.6 million from the Dave King estate under powers to seize the proceeds of crime. This included a £1 million house in Winchmore Hill, North London. Customs and Excise told the agency that King was a drug trafficker and a money launderer who could not have legitimately afforded his property. Roger Vincent had his assets frozen. These were worth almost £1 million, which included properties in Spain and Cyprus, as well as his house in Buckinghamshire, which was valued at about £500,000 in 2005. It was ruled that his assets were the result of drug trafficking, fraud, extortion, contract killings, and money laundering. So that's another podcast in the Canning Town series, although I realise I've strayed out of the area for this podcast in some respects. The next podcast will again focus on some unsolved murders, in particular that of Terry Godram and Maxine Arnold. So until next time, I will thank Damselfly for providing the background music, and I'd thank you all for listening and downloading the podcast. And until next time, I'll say goodbye. Goodbye and thank you.